Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lay.
Last week on the podcast, we talked to Mark Owens, and Mark had a great story. When Mark was building out his rental portfolio, he was focusing on cash flow. That was really the name of the game for Mark. He was buying properties that, after he paid his mortgage payment and any expenses he had on the property, the properties were producing excess capital that he was spending, and he was able to eventually have enough properties where he could leave his job. And today he's built a lot of wealth by just focusing on cash flow. If you haven't heard that episode, it's number 118. You should definitely go back and check it out. Real inspiring story. My guest today on the podcast has a completely different philosophy. My guest focuses on appreciation. He's not too concerned with cash flow. His properties are positive and they make a little bit of money. But where he's really banking on making his money is long-term appreciation. And the incredible thing, he's done it. He's got a lot of properties and they've all appreciated quite a bit. And he's built a lot of wealth by focusing on appreciation. So I think it's going to be kind of interesting to compare how these two guys have completely different philosophies, and they probably wouldn't agree with what either one is doing, but they've both created a lot of wealth. And I think that's really the great thing with rental properties. There's so many different ways we can do it. So let's take a real quick break. We'll come back in 30 seconds and we'll meet Tim Shiner from Dallas.
Are you on track to achieve your financial goals? Income-producing real estate is the most historically proven way to accumulate wealth and has created more financial freedom than any other means. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best turnkey cash flow rental properties. Our simple proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly income. Get your free strategy session with our knowledgeable investment counselors at noradarealestate.com. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com.
Hey, Tim, welcome to the podcast.
Dan, thank you so much for having me. And Rental Income Podcast, probably the best name of any podcast out there.
Thank you.
Not R.I.P., rest in peace. How about rest in profits?
I love it. That's good. That's even better. So, Tim, tell us about yourself. How did you first get interested in owning rental properties?
So I had a goal to buy a house before I turned 20 years old, and fortunately I was able to do it at 19 and 10 months. So I don't reflect back on much or prideful about much, but the fact that I moved out of my parents' house at 18 and 6 months, moved from Chicago to Dallas and had a house in 19 and 10 months was, you know, quite of a accomplishment. Now that you're 51 years old and you can look back, you're like, man, how'd you pull that off? But the good news was I got a house. The bad news is it was in a bad neighborhood. The good news is I end up having a roommate that end up paying half the utilities and what turned out to be half the mortgage. So it's actually cheaper for me to live in a house. It's 2-bedroom, 1-bath, 1-car garage on an acre. Plus it had a treehouse. And it was just a better way of living than living in an apartment. I was very fortunate to get going at a young age on that. And back then you could assume a mortgage. So I assumed a FHA mortgage. I have no clue what my credit score was back then, but I'm sure it wasn't very high because I didn't have that much credit. And but by assuming a mortgage is how I got in. And one thing I think I would tell the Rental Income Podcast people is don't say no for yourself. Try to figure out a way to get into something. And, you know, and my parents were going to sign for my mortgage, and then my father lost his job during the process of me looking. So I had to find another way. So I know there's been a lot of success stories in the past on your podcast, but don't say no for yourself and try to figure out a way to get into something, even if there's an obstacle. I bought a lot of owner finance property through the years and just look for those type of opportunities.
That's really good advice, because there is always a way to make a deal, and it might not be obvious at first, but if you're open-minded, a lot of times you can make things work. So I think that's really good advice. So that property didn't work out well, right, at the end?
Well, it's crazy because it was positive cash flow throughout, and it was just in a lower end area, and it was never going to appreciate. And then I bought another house before I was 21, so I had two houses at a very young age, and again in an area that didn't appreciate. And then, you know, I got married in 95. I actually got married a lot younger than that, but I bought a house in about 94, 95 in an area that used to be a good area. And it was surrounded by apartments, and that house didn't appreciate very much either. So through these three properties that didn't appreciate much, I went polar opposite and decided to buy high quality properties. Sorry about that, Dan.
Oh, that's all right.
High quality properties in great school districts. So it's basically the trials and tribulations of what I did on the lower end forced me to go the other way. Now, you know, I'm fortunate that I have other streams of income. I have other businesses. I've got some inventions and multiple streams of income that I could temporarily not be positive on a property because I wanted a better quality tenant and I want a better quality, house. So, you know, that's a little bit different than what most of your people do.
Yeah. And I think that's interesting because a lot of times those houses that are high quality houses where you're going to get a higher quality tenant, a lot of times it's difficult to cash flow. I think a lot of people would want to own those properties, but it's hard to make the numbers work. Are you just in an area where those numbers work, or are you happy taking a smaller return?
You know, I took a smaller monthly return in the beginning on these properties, but another, you know, let me talk about a couple concepts and where my head's at, and maybe it'll be a different way to think for some of the folks on rental income. But I've got a theory I call BAD, and it's an acronym for you buy once, then there's appreciation, then there's debt reduction. So let's go through each of those. You buy the property once. So you're either going to pay above market, fair market, or below market. And that occurs once. And once it's done, it's done. And we all love to buy equity. And sometimes in really quality areas, it's hard to buy equity. You're fortunate to buy fair market or slightly above fair market. But regardless, B happens once you're done. And then we'll go to D, debt reduction. And this is where, you know, I'm writing another book where husband and wife go back and forth on real estate. So you can see different sides of the equation. But I think we all agree that debt reduction, whether it's a 15-year note, 20 or 30, takes a very long time. Mm-hmm. It's a snail race. And sometimes couples get into arguments of, you know, what are these rental properties really doing for us? You know, we got a leaky toilet here, hot water heater here, air conditioner there. And they get real frustrated because the debt reduction takes forever.
Right.
So that's the D of bad. Now, the only thing left is the A, which is appreciation. And some people could say, hey, that's gambling or bubble mentality and all that. But it's worked out extremely well for me. And the thing about appreciation is that's the one thing that can happen in the next year, 3 year, 5 year. You know, 30-year mortgage can take a long time. But that appreciation, if you buy the right property in the right school district, that can actually happen. And it's happened tremendously in my life. The area I'm in, part of my portfolio, we got $5 million worth of houses in an area called Southlake, Texas. What's unique about it is there's no multifamily, there's no apartments, there's nothing. So the appreciation in that town last year alone went up 20%. So if you have $5 million and it went up 20%, you made $1 million passively. So if we're talking about cash flow and revenue streams, you know, what if you wanted to take 200 of that $1 million on a refi? Well, that's pretty good. And if you divided that, let's say you took 240 out of that. If you divided that by 12, that's $20,000 a month. So that's another way of looking at cash flow.
Right. Now, what about just being able to hang on until that appreciation comes? Are you able to cover the mortgage with the rent payments, or how do the numbers work on your properties?
So in the beginning, I probably was negative a couple hundred bucks a month, but that was also, you know, 10 plus years ago. Mm-hmm. Now we're extremely positive. We're positive. $8,000 a month.
So the way that worked is that the rent, you were able to raise the rent over time, but your mortgage payment stayed the same.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, then you also had debt reduction too.
Right. Right. But as far as having the money to pay the mortgage every month, to hang on for that appreciation, I guess like that's maybe where people, I think maybe people go wrong when they don't buy for cash flow, I totally agree.
So, you know, my analogy is we all learned how to ride a bike with training wheels, and eventually the training wheels went off. So when I started buying properties with in a better school district, I was probably 35 years old. So my training wheels already fell off. I already had a decent, not a great net worth, but decent net worth. I had money in the bank. I could afford a negative. But let's look at it this way. Let's say that a house only goes up. Let's say that it's a $240,000 house. And one scenario, you got a house that's not appreciating, and you're bringing in $200 a month on a $240,000 house. That's $2,400 a year. Mm-hmm. Now, let's say you had another house that wasn't positive cash flow, but was up 1% in appreciation. That's $2,400 also. But let's say that house was up 2%. Well, that's $4,800 or 3%, and so on and so on. So it's just a different way of looking at it. And I'm fortunate that I'm in an area that's appreciating tremendously. And I do understand that it's 50 states and people are buying in different areas for different things.
Right.
And I'm not saying any way's wrong or right. But the thing I love about appreciation is how you get that out is by refinancing, and all that money is tax free.
Right.
Whereas any money that you're making positive every month is taxable.
That's
so
true.
You could arguably say that the appreciation money is the best type of money because it's tax free.
That's true. That's a really good point. That you're basically taking a loan against the property, so it's not counted as income, even though you've got actual cash that you can spend. That's a really good point. Have you found that it's difficult to find a lender that will do a cash out refi on an investment property?
Not when you have a lot of equity.
Okay.
It was difficult in the beginning, and quite honestly, I didn't want to pull anything out because I had other ways of making money. So I was fine with that big pot of money being there. But just recently, like I said, there's $5 million worth of property. I'll tell you a true real life story. So first part of the year, I did, you know, my kids are 15 and 17, and I'm like, you know what? I want to have a pot of money. I want to have a pot of money that isn't attached to anything. And so I owed $1.8 million on these 10 properties. I'm sorry, they're 15 properties. I owed $1.8 million. They're worth $5 million, and I refied at $2.1 million. And so I pulled out a little bit over $300,000 tax free, which quite honestly I haven't done a single thing with other than take vacations with the kids and do some and bought my son a car.
That's awesome.
But that was kind of the first time. So if you think about it, it's still a tremendous loan for the bank. I mean, they got 2.9 worth of equity in that loan. And quite honestly, for people listening on the podcast, as you know, we all want to be 80-20 when we want to leverage up. We want to grow like crazy. And so now I have a $500,000 line of credit. And I mean, I could have easily pulled out another $1 million, but I don't want to. And then the other thing that you said that I want to speak to is you're talking about timeline. Well, I've shifted my timeline a few years ago to forever. So I plan on holding my houses forever. So if it doesn't appreciate this year, if it goes up or down, or 9/11 happens again, or 09 happens again, so what? My timeline's forever. I want to pass these houses to my kids, and I view it as I just want to slowly take off the cream off the milk in a refi. So just pull 100 here, pull 200,000 there over the next 5-10 years, and just keep scraping, but never get rid of the base asset.
That's awesome. You can't lose when your timeline is forever. I mean, I think that's a great attitude.
I stole that timeline from a guy that's doing pretty well, Warren Buffett. Buffett buys a stock.
He's doing all right.
It says his timeline is forever. But if you think about that, you know, we're kind of half joking about Buffett, but the reality is if you're buying an okay rent house, or you could suck it up and buy a little bit better, 30, 40, 50% better rent house, and if your timeline's forever, wouldn't you rather own the quality deal? I think Warren Buffett tries to buy the best quality stocks at the very best possible price. And if you did the exact same thing in real estate and your timeline's forever, you're going to want quality. And that's where I'm at now is I just want quality, and it's got to pass the sniff test of, do I think it's going to be as good or better 10 years, 50 years, 100 years? And if the answer is yes, I'm buying.
Tim, you've thought of something else that you're doing that I don't think has come up on the podcast before, but it's a real unique way to indirectly make some money off your rentals. I want to hear about it, but first we need to take a real quick break and get a word in from Realty Shares.
Not an offering of securities. Private investments are highly illiquid and risky and are not suitable for all investors. Past performance is not indicative of future results. Securities offered to accredited investors through North Capital Private Securities. Member FINRA SIPC.
As a real estate investor, you know that there's two things that are the hardest things about investing in real estate. The first one is finding deals, and then number two is vetting those deals. It can take an incredible amount of time, effort, energy, and money to find the right deals. Well, now there's a much easier way to do it. It's called Realty Shares, and that's spelled R-E-A-L-T-Y Shares, realtyshares.com. Basically, what they do is they go out there and they're finding deals. They're networking, they're doing marketing, all kinds of things to find deals. Once they find the deals, they've got a team of people that vet the deals. They make sure the numbers look good. And if everything looks good, they put those deals on their website. And then if you have at least $5,000 and you qualify, you can invest in these deals. It's super easy. You can scroll through everything. When something looks good, you're comfortable with the property and the due diligence and the pictures and everything. If everything looks good, you can invest right there from your computer. It's a great way to diversify your portfolio. So let's just say, for example, you have $20,000. You could invest $5,000 in four different deals, and now you've just added four streams of income. So I think it's really neat. It's a really, really great service. They've got close to 100,000 investors nationwide that are on their platform, and they've returned over $60 million in principal to their investors. It's a really neat service. Again, it's realtyshares.com, R-E-A-L-T-Y shares, realtyshares.com. And if you go to realtyshares.com/rental, you can get $100 towards your first investment. That's realtyshares.com/rental, R-E-A-L-T-Y shares.com/rental. All right, let's get back to the interview. Tim, so you've got a unique way that you are making some extra money with your rentals. Tell me what you're doing.
And so we came up with a slogan called buy from me, tear up your lease for free. So buy from me, tear up your lease for free. I think everyone on Rental Income Podcast would agree that every renter eventually leaves. Mm-hmm. And so if they're going to leave, why not have an equity moment when they leave? And when they leave, I think we've all had adversarial situations and we've had pleasant situations. I mean, how nice is it to see that the house is spick and span and you get to write their deposit check back? Everyone thinks that we want their deposit checks. The last thing I ever want is a deposit check. You want to give it back because the house is perfect.
Right.
So we do a deal where we're constantly reminding our tenants, like if it's the 4th of July, they get a flag and an apple pie with a flyer, buy from me, tear up your lease for free. If it's Halloween, they're getting a pumpkin, you know, et cetera. We're constantly reminding them they can get out of their lease at any time if they buy a house from my wife. Now, where our houses are pretty affluent areas, Crystal actually had a house closed yesterday that was $640,000. So we had renters that were paying $2,400 on a house, and they bought a $640,000 house. And after she pays her broker, her cut is about $15,000. And that literally closed yesterday. We had
awesome.
One earlier in the year that was $1,200,000, and these people were paying $2,200 on a four-bedroom, two-bath, two-car garage for us. And so it's another way of making a revenue stream. And what I preach all the time to anyone that'll listen is I want couples to be really happy and compatible and have like-minded goals. And so when your wife or your husband is the realtor and the other person is maybe the primary breadwinner, well, now you have an opportunity to make these 3% minus your broker fee, these 3% pop while you're doing your long-term forever deal. Some people ask me, hey, will you ever sell your house? And I'll never sell my houses. They're too hard to get. And if I got the money, I would just go back and buy something exactly
right.
So, but what we do is we help people get into their house. And if you're in the lower end part, you know, I've owned lower end part. I own four apartment complexes up in Kentucky. Unfortunately, those folks are never going to buy a house. So that program, buy from me, tear up your lease for free, will never work on a low end deal. But when people are poo-pooing, you know, I got to have cash flow today. Well, just think about this, you know, I mean, $15,000, I mean, divide that by a monthly, that's over $1,000 a month positive if
right.
you took it as a one-year lease. That house probably, I bought that house that they're moving out of. It's called Creekside. I bought that house for $242,000 and it's now it's worth $5,000.
Wow.
So it's appreciated tremendously, and it's also presenting this alternate revenue stream. So, you know, Dan, you and I have talked. I mean, there's no right way or wrong way, and there's a million different ways to play the real estate game. And I just – this is just my version of where I'm comfortable at 51 years old. And I understand if you're 21 or 31, it might be a different deal.
Right. But, I mean, that having your wife sell houses to high-end buyers is awesome because – those are deals that she never would have gotten if those buyers weren't your tenants. So,
Can you think about all these poor real estate agents that are trying to farm and knock on doors and mail out $1 zillion in mailing. What we did is we created a funnel. We've got 19 high-end houses in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and we've created a funnel from those 19 that spits out, you know, so far this year, 3 sales. But, you know, let's say it's 2 to 4 sales a year. And let's say that it's, you know, call it 12,000 a sale. You know, on the low end, it's 24. On the high end, it's 48. That's a nice little bump.
Sure
on
is.
Top of
yeah.
everything else.
And so the way you work it is that save the people live there, that they are there for 9 months, and then they decide they want to buy a house with your wife. So they can end their lease early or
anytime
they can get out of it. That's awesome.
Well, a couple other things, because the market's so hot, the odds that a renter is going to find their dream home within the 30-day window of being out of a lease and not having a double pay are slim and none. Mm-hmm. So the other thing that we do when we get tenants in, we're basically like, hey, we're forever. We're never selling. You don't have to worry about, you know, some event in our life and we have to sell the house and you get kicked out. With a lot of high-end renters don't even imagine that scenario because they haven't rented since college.
Right.
So you remind them of that. And then you also let them know that, hey, whenever you're ready to get out, you're good to go. But quite honestly, it also makes us think a little bit differently on the tenants that we have. Crystal had 2 different tenants over the summer. One was from Houston. One was from San Francisco, where she FaceTimed the houses and got with DocuSign, got leases on them before they actually saw them. But if my wife wasn't a realtor, I doubt somebody getting 25% of the first month rent would go to all that.
Right.
But more importantly, we got to understand their situation. The people from Houston wanted to rent for 1 year and buy. People from San Francisco are already pre-approved for $600,000 or $700,000, and they want to rent for 1 year and buy. So we were the perfect match for them because they plan on buying. Mm-hmm. Whereas if your wife's not a realtor or you're not a realtor, you're like, oh man, they only want to rent for 1 year and these other people want to rent for 2 years. I think I'm going to go with the 2 year people. So it kind of tosses the apple cart upside down and you're looking at things a little different when you have this type of scenario.
Right. Now, another benefit of having high-end rentals is that they say those tenants are easier to manage and you're going to have less repair problems because they're nice houses. Has that been true?
It has been true. I would say when you pick the property, you pick your problems. And I hate the word problem. I like the word opportunity. But in this case, when you pick your property, you're going to pick what type of situation that you now are with. It's like it's like adopting the wrong dog from the pound or the great dog from the pound. Either way, you got to live with them. And either way, it's going to be one way or the other. So my experience has been I like dealing with higher end properties because of appreciation. I like dealing with higher end properties because I have less problems. And, you know, we've done a couple smart things through the years because we've made so many mistakes beforehand. And I'm sure we'll make plenty more. But one thing we do is we put the first $100 worth of repairs are on the tenant. And what that does is, you know, hey, a doorknob fell off or a toilet, you know, did this or that. You can go, hey, the first $100 is on you. So it eliminates some of that. But we also tell them that this is like our 401k. This is our retirement. We're going to take care of our retirement. But, you know, a doorknob this or a something that under $100, you know, don't call us on it. Mm-hmm. The one other thing we've done is you have to email everything. We basically say you got to email so that we have it in writing. But what we really want to avoid is that knee-jerk phone call at Sunday night,
right,
you know, 5 o'clock when you're having dinner. And we've done a couple other things recently. We now write in the lease that we have the ability to put it in MLS to release it 45 days out instead of 30. It gives us a little head start. No one ever balks at it. And the new one we just did is if they don't let us put a lockbox on the door, it's a $5,000 fine. And so because we've just had scenarios of people that they forget that it's our house.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And so So, you know, the key is if anyone squabbles on any of the stuff, we can negotiate it out.
Yeah.
But a lot of people are just going to sign whatever's put underneath their nose.
Right.
So why not write the contract a little bit better for you?
Sure. And then being able to show the house 45 days in advance, you can usually, or I guess, can you line someone up?
No downtime. Absolutely.
That's great.
And one final thing that we do, because in this higher end rental, it's all about the school district. It's all about the kids. It's all about family. And so like, let's say I bought a house in November. I wouldn't have that lease come up next November. I would either write a lease for 6 or 7 months or a year in 6 or 7 months. We have all of our leases come up in the summer. It's really a benefit for us, but it's also a benefit for them because they're going to have more to choose from that is for sale, and they're going to have more to choose from if they choose to rent a different house.
Right.
But trying to relet a house between Thanksgiving and Christmas in a really family oriented area is really kind of counterproductive.
Right.
And you know, if we do a year and 6 month lease, like if we bought the house in November, you remind them, hey, you plan on buying a house. So whether it's, you know, an 18 month lease, 17 month lease or 12 month lease, it really doesn't matter because you have an out.
Right. Now, how many houses do you guys have right now?
You know, I'm jumping all over the map. It's we're in the process of selling 4 apartment complexes up in Kentucky, just because of the lower end challenges we've had. So, you know, my standard thing was we have 153 doors. Well, we're we're selling, and that's about 138 doors. So, I think we got roughly 19, but we just bought one the other day, and we got some commercial buildings. But my focus is, you know, the high-end resi that we have. And we got some stragglers.
How much time do you think you spend per week managing the properties?
I'd probably say 1.5 hours
a day. Okay.
So, you know, let's extrapolate that. Let's say it's 7 to 10 hours a week. And it, as everyone knows, when you have turnover, then it bumps up. But when everything's, you know, when it's November and everything's full and everything's going good, you know, there's not as much. But, you know, the key is having the right why. We know why we're doing this.
Right.
We're doing this to build long-term leverage net worth. And so whatever bump or whatever challenge we have in a day or a week, so what? You know, going to work.
Right.
I'm sure there's people driving to work listening to this podcast that they've got all kinds of challenges. The difference is it's not someone paying off their debt and appreciating, and it's leverage. So, you know, pick the challenge.
Right. Well, Tim, you have a great story. I'm really, really happy that you came on the show to share it with my audience. If someone wants to reach out to you or learn more about you, what's the best way for people to find you?
Sure. A couple of things, Dan, thanks for asking. So, timshiner.com, like Shiner, like a black eye or the tasty Texas beer. And on that website, my website, I've got a free poster, 25 Habits of a Future Millionaire. And, it's you know, it's trying to help young people or someone that's trying to grow. And then also I wrote a book, 50 Things They Didn't Teach You in School, which are just kind of, you know, street smarty things. And one of the chapters is buy 5 rent houses and you're set for life. And that book is on Amazon or on my website. And all the money goes to, the community storehouse in Keller, Texas, which is a food bank. So I'm not making a nickel off that. I'm not making a nickel off the poster. You know, I was lucky to have mentors when I was younger, and I'm happy to help anyone that that needs a little help. Shoot me an email. I'll be more than happy to take a few moments and help.
Awesome. Well, if you're driving or running or doing whatever you're doing right now, I will put all those links on my website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode119. Tim, thank you so much for coming on the show, and thank you for listening. We'll be back with a new episode next Tuesday. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.